Chapter 15. Why was the Jedi Master cross-eyed? Because he couldn't control his pupils. Jason Solo, age 15. An approaching battle fleet crept into view, a distant crescent of blue pinpoints shining bright against the shadowy depths of the transitory mists. To one side of the formation hung the nebulous smudge of the gravity well the fleet was skirting, a barely glowing protostar so deeply purple it was almost black. To the other side lay a hazard even more dangerous, a mist-cloaked field of icy monoliths that had once been the third gas giant in an unstable triple-world cluster. Jaina glanced down at the Stealth X's tactical display, and, as she expected, saw only static. The mists in this part of the mod system were so thick that an object had to be nearly recognizable before it could be scanned or signaled. That was one of the reasons Luke and Tenel Ka had selected this spot for the ambush. The other reason was, of course, the natural abundance of navigational hazards. Kytus's fleet would be forced to make a long real-space approach through a narrow, safe channel, with barely detectable gravity wells and moon-sized ice chunks hiding in the mists to every side. All Jaina had to do was lure him in and make him believe this was the route to the secret Jedi base. It was a simple plan, really, at least in theory. So far, she seemed to be doing a good job. Kytus had followed the blood trail this far, anyway. Her position was just across the mid-system void from Shadumad, more or less in line with it, and close enough that he was unlikely to have noticed her shift from the real base. At least, that's what Luke had told her, and he obviously knew more about blood trails. Her next task was to head back down the Throat, Saba's name for the channel where Tenel Ka would ambush Kytus. Jaina had to make it look like she was rushing back to base to sound the alarm. At that point, the Jedi would launch an assault on the Anakin Solo, covering her so that she could board and hunt down her brother. She tried not to think about that last part of her job. If she let her thoughts rush too far ahead of the actual events, she might not get there at all. Jaina began to bring up the systems she had left dormant to conserve her batteries, then realized she had not sensed any sharpening in her wingmate's force aura. She glanced over to the other Stealth X and found Zek's helmet turned toward the other side of his canopy, facing the amber-striped disks of Kogo and Uluk, the twin gas giants locked in a mutual orbit at the base of the Throat. He was so lost in thought that he didn't even sense Jaina looking in his direction, and she was surprised to discover that made her feel a little sad. They had been so close for so many years. Jaina had simply taken for granted that they would always be the ideal mission partners, in force contact on an almost unconscious level, able to read each other's thoughts and intentions almost to the same degree as her parents. But that wasn't really true anymore. Something had changed while Jaina was away training with the Mandalorians. She had returned to discover that sometimes it took a conscious effort to maintain her connection with Zek, almost as though she had to keep reminding him that she was there. Jaina had tried to tell herself that the change was due to her current mission, because she had to confront Kytus alone. But she knew better. The truth was, Zek had probably just grown weary of waiting for her to sort out her personal life. Or maybe the time apart had helped him realize he didn't need to be anything more than her wingmate. That probably shouldn't have made her sad, but it did. Jaina reached out and gave Zek a force nudge. His helmet swung toward her a little too quickly, and a tinge of embarrassment came to his force aura. She frowned, wondering if he had been thinking of those Hapen intelligence agents. And immediately one of the names, Terran, popped into her mind. Jaina shook her head in disbelief.
"Careful, Zek," she thought. "That one will twist you up."
A ripple of confusion rolled through the force. Jaina grinned behind her breath mask, wistfully, but it was a grin, and pointed up the throat toward the protostar. Kytus's fleet had already changed from a crescent of blue pinpoints to a snaking ribbon. A handful of faint, tiny specks were moving ahead of the ribbon and fanning out in all directions, scouting craft, on their way to map hazards and check for ambushes. They were going to find both, Jaina knew, but it didn't matter. The Masters had foreseen that possibility, and squadrons of Mytils were hiding at key points to ensure that none of the reconnaissance skiffs survived to report their discoveries. Zek quickly brought up his own systems. Then they accelerated out into the throat and turned straight for Uroro Station, an abandoned transfer facility floating in the gravitic equilibrium point between Kogo and Uluk. Luke and most of the Jedi were there, along with a select group of younglings and academy staff. If it was going to be an effective decoy, it would have to feel like the real thing when Kytus reached out to it through the Force. Jaina made no attempt to hide her presence in the Force, since the whole idea was to let Kytus sense them returning to Uroro Station, and it would have been pointless anyway, since Zek hadn't been taught the technique yet. They had been traveling down the throat for about 2 minutes when Jaina felt a prickle of danger sense. Not only had they been spotted, she realized, but they were about to be fired upon. She reached out to warn Zek, but he was focused on her and the mission now, and he had already picked up on her panic. They banked hard to starboard, and felt space jump as a turbolaser strike erupted behind them. Jaina dived, and Zek climbed. That almost never happened, and a sheet of fire boiled past her canopy. She feared for a moment that Zek had been hit, but then she felt him worrying about her and knew that he was okay. It took nearly a minute of dodging and barrel rolling before there was enough of a lull in the barrage to chance forming up again, and by that time, Jaina's flight gloves were soaked with sweat. It felt like the throat was vomiting fire. This was something the Masters hadn't anticipated, and it was going to complicate things. If she and Zek returned to Uroro Station under fire, Kytus would sense the trap. It would look like they were trying to lead him right to their secret base. So they would have to dodge into the ice field and make it look like they were attempting to lead Kytus away from the station. Right. But they couldn't dodge too soon. The thought came to Jaina without her quite understanding why she had realized it. Apparently, Zek was trying to tell her something through the Force, but he couldn't be too obvious because Kytus might be monitoring their meld. She checked her tactical display and still didn't see anything on the screen except the conspicuous disks of the two gas giants. Then she noticed the distances to the pair and understood. Jaina and Zek were still 2 minutes away from the place where Tenel Ka was hiding with her fleet. If they left the throat now and Kytus followed, the Hapens wouldn't be in position to attack. Jaina smiled and brought her Stealth X in a little behind Zek's, allowing him to take the lead. It was good to be flying with him again, even if it was going to be nearly impossible to survive the next 2 minutes. And Jaina had a hunch he felt the same way. From the observation deck of Uroro Station, the throat suddenly looked like a long, dark tunnel with an atomic furnace at the other end. Han could see nothing inside but a boiling ball of turbolaser fire, slowly expanding as it drew nearer to their position. Saba and the other Masters stood waiting in rapt silence, already dressed in their combat-rated vac suits in anticipation of boarding the Anakin Solo to rescue Princess Holder. Han would have bet they were as scared as he was had there been anyone in the chamber who looked willing to take such a sucker bet. Luke must have noticed something in Han's demeanor, maybe the way he was biting his lip or his fingernails digging into his palms, because he clapped a hand on Han's shoulder. "They're doing fine, Han," he said quietly. "They don't even seem frightened." "I'm glad someone's not." Han did not want to keep looking out the viewport, but he couldn't tear his eyes away. "What made us think he'd just follow her?" he growled. "He's been trying to kill everyone else in the family." Saba glanced over, her bulging eyes so far open that they looked like they might fall out of their scaly sockets.
"Who says we didn't?" she asked. "But we had to make it look like someone was on patrol, and Jaina is the best one to whet Kytus's appetite."
"Oh, that makes sense," Han said sarcastically. He turned to Leia, who seemed only marginally less worried than he was. "Our next kids are not going to be Jedi."
"Sure, Han. Whatever you say."
Leia's eyes did not leave the viewport.
"But I don't think you have to worry about having more kids."
"Hey, I'm still young," Han said. "And you're a Jedi." Before Leia could utter a comeback, Corin Horn's voice rang out from the portable control panel at the back of the deck, where C-3PO and R2-D2 were working. The two droids were tweeting and sniping at each other as they helped assimilate data streaming in from a dozen different sources.
"We're starting to receive relays from the Hapen observation posts," Corin said. "I'll put it up."
All eyes shifted to the portable wall display that had been affixed along one side of the deck. It was not a true tactical display. Instead, a simple graphic represented all the data being relayed from the Hapen observation posts via line-of-sight transmissions, visual flash codes, and even droid couriers. The throat was depicted as a white ribbon snaking down the center of the screen toward a spoked wheel labeled Ororo Station. Coming down the center of this ribbon was a collection of simple designator codes identifying the vessels in Kytus's fleet. From what Han could see, it included the handful of remnant Star Destroyers that had escaped destruction in the Roach system, along with a sizable support flotilla of heavy cruisers, pocket destroyers, and frigates. But it was what lay in the heart of the fleet that made Han's stomach sink. Floating alongside the Anakin Solo was a designator reading Megador with a question mark. Han glanced back at the red ball boiling down the throat and began to feel queasy. The Megador was a super-class Star Destroyer. It carried more than 5 times the firepower of a typical Imperial II like the Anakin Solo, and there had been rumors of a weapons upgrade that included 3 batteries of new long-range turbo lasers. If that was after Jaina and Zek, he didn't know how long they could last.
"I don't think we'll be giving anything away by launching our defenses now, Master Horn," Luke said. "Give the order."
"About time," Han muttered. He glanced over to see that Luke had also turned away from the display. But instead of staring out the viewport toward the approaching fleet, Luke was standing with his hands clasped behind his back and his head down, his eyes closed as though lost in his thoughts. Or his memories, or some kind of Jedi trance. Corin acknowledged the order and relayed the command. The Jedi fighters did not begin to automatically stream from the station's dilapidated hangars, however. To avoid any possibility of making Kytus suspect an ambush by reacting a little too quickly, Luke had insisted that the pilots remain in the ready rooms with their helmets off and flight suits open. Han spent the next 30 seconds looking from the viewport to the wall display, trying to guess when Jaina and Zek would finally be out of danger. The Hapen home fleet could be seen clustered together along one edge of the display, a mass of designator symbols packed tightly among the craggy blue blotches representing the field of ice chunks. It seemed all too likely that Jaina and Zek would not try to escape the barrage until they were well past the Hapen position. And he admired their courage, he really did. He just wished that he could have been out there instead. At long last, lines of starfighters began to stream away from the station. There was a squadron of Wookiee-piloted Owls, and another squadron of the new blast boats, piloted by Alliance deserters who had chosen to seek out the Jedi instead of heeding the Offal's call to join her. Then came the stealth X-Wing, a black tide of cruciform shadows that remained silhouetted against the firelit depths of the throat for only a moment before winking out of sight. The fighters had been gone for a full minute when Leia reached over and grabbed Han's hand. Hard. His heart stopped beating, probably because it had gotten stuck in his throat, and he knew she was about to tell him she had just felt something in the Force.
"What is it?"
he asked, steeling himself for the worst.
"Are they—"
"Not under fire anymore," Leia said. "I don't know how, I don't know where, but they're safe." Han let out a long breath of relief.
"Why wouldn't they be?" he asked. "Jaina's got my luck."
Leia smiled. "That and the Force," she said. Han would have argued the Force comment, except that the firestorm in the throat suddenly seemed to be dying away. He checked the wall display and saw that Kytus's fleet was slowing down. Unfortunately, it was still short of the area where the Hapens were lying in ambush.
"Uh-oh," he said, more to himself than anyone else. "It looks like they're getting careful."
Saba hissed, and the rest of the masters in the room began to whisper about Kytus's battle powers and his ability to read the future. Luke said nothing. He just stood in front of the viewport, his hands folded behind his back and his gaze fixed on the deck between his feet.
"Hey, Luke," Han asked. "You okay?"
"He is gone again," Saba said. "Why does he keep doing that when we need him most?"
The twinkle in the Barabel's bulbous eye suggested she knew exactly why Luke kept doing it. But that wasn't much comfort to Han. Right now, the young Jedi kids and support staff brought along to act as decoys were waiting in the docks on the bottom level of the station, packed into transports and ready to evacuate when Luke gave the order. The idea had been that the kids would leave before the attack on the station came. But with those long-range turbo lasers, Kytus was almost close enough now to open fire, and it was beginning to look like he intended to stand off and do just that.
Maybe we'd better handle this order ourselves," Han said.
That was the trouble with wars. The enemy always had a way of doing something unexpected that ruined your carefully made plans.
"The Megador is getting close enough to open up on us, and this place isn't exactly well shielded."
Saba studied Luke for a moment, then said,
"I will ask my fellow masters."
She turned to consult with Kip, Silgal, and the others.
"Great," Han muttered. "They ought to reach a decision about the time the battle's over."
"Don't be so cynical," Leia chided. "They're masters. They can hear you." Han winced and glanced over his shoulder at the circle. No one seemed to be looking in his direction, but Kip did wag a finger at him. The finger had not yet stopped when C-3PO announced,
"The observation posts are reporting that the Anakin Solo and Megador have both launched their starfighter complements."
That news brought the Master's debate to an early halt.
Saba and the others stopped to glance over at the wall display, which showed the enemy starfighters as a stream of flickering dots streaming out to meet the Owls and blast boats.
"He's not buying our act," Han said. "We need to give him a reason to keep coming down the throat, and clear out while we still can."
Saba nodded her agreement, then turned to the other masters, who also nodded, almost as one. Saba turned back to Han.
"Okay," she said. "The masters agree. You can give the order."
"Me?" Han asked. "But I'm not—"
"It was your idea,"
Saba interrupted, tilting her head at him.
Do you not think it is a good one?
Don't have a doubt, Han said. He snapped the comlink from his pocket and opened a channel to the convoy commander. Time to get out of here, Ben. But don't send everyone at once. We've got to make it look good.
Okay. Ben's voice sounded uncertain. This is Uncle Han, right?
Yeah, Han said. You got a problem with that?
No, Ben said. But Dad, or Master Skywalker, said to wait for his order.
Han glanced over at Luke, who was still staring at the floor with nothing in his eyes but his pupils, then looked at the wall display again. Kitus's fleet had slowed, but it hadn't stopped, and it would only be a couple of minutes before it could start firing on Uroro Station.
Your dad's busy right now, Han said, and the Megador is probably going to open up with her long-range turbo lasers real soon. I kind of thought you'd want to be gone when that happens.
Oh, Ben said. I guess that makes sense. Initiating decoy operation at once.
A few seconds later, a motley assortment of light transports began to shoot away from the station. The first part of their trajectory carried them directly up the throat toward Kitus's fleet. But within a minute or so, they started to arc around the bulge of Kogo's amber-striped sphere, heading for the ice field where the Hapens lay in hiding. If all went according to plan, Kitus would pursue, Tenel Ka would ambush him, and the assault fleet would be destroyed. But battles never went according to plan. As it grew more apparent that the transports were fleeing, the remnant fleet did begin to accelerate down the throat again, moving to pursue them into the ice field just as Luke and Tenel Ka had hoped. But the Solo and the Megador remained behind with a handful of escorts, moving down the throat to fire on Uroro Station.
That's not good, Leia observed.
It could be worse, Han said reassuringly. I'm not sure how, but it could be.
Of course. That was when the life returned to Luke's eyes. He shook his head and frowned out the viewport for a moment, then turned to study the situation on the wall display. The last of the transports was passing through the ice field, heading for a mist passage that would carry it back to the Hapen ground forces Tenel Ka had left to defend Shedu Mod.
Strange, Luke said.
I don't recall telling Ben to evacuate.
Guess you were talking in your sleep again, Han said. But it was time. Trust me.
Luke chuckled.
It seems I have no other choice.
As usual, he said. But Kitus's caution does throw a hydro spanner in our plan.
I don't suppose you came up with a brilliant alternative plan while I was sleeping. Actually, I have, Han said. First, we all get the kark off this heap before they start blowing it apart.
I must say, that certainly seems like a brilliant plan to me, C-3PO offered, turning away from the control panel. I only hope the next step is equally clever.
I'm working on that, Han said, starting for the exit. But button up your vac suits, everybody. If I know my Jaina, she's going to board the Anakin Solo one way or another, and we're going to be right there behind her.
Like the little brother it was named for, the Anakin Solo hung in the shadow of the mighty Megador. The Megador was pounding away with its long-range turbo lasers, pouring a river of crimson beams down the throat toward Uroro Station. With its own long-range batteries still out of commission after the sabotage at Kashyyyk, the Anakin Solo was concentrating on perimeter protection, using its normal turbo lasers and point defense arrays to build a shell of anti-starcraft fire around both vessels. Jaina glanced over at the scorched ruin of a Stealth X floating next to her own pock-holed wreck. Zek was leaning down in the cockpit, trying to splice together a wire beneath the control panel. She knew it was nothing critical, because, incredibly, both stealth X's were still flyable. But she thought about urging him to head back to Shedumad. Trouble was, she was pretty sure he wouldn't go unless she came too, and that wasn't going to happen. So Jaino reached out to him through their combat meld, urging him to be ready. His helmet popped back into view, looking toward his tail first, then his flanks, and finally turning forward. When he finally seemed to realize there was no immediate threat, Jaina had the distinct impression that he thought she was crazy. He was probably right. Neither of their starfighters was in any condition for a fight. Jaina's shields were only a fond memory, and three of Zek's laser cannons had drooping tips. Both starfighters were low on fuel, leaking coolant, and had been forced to revert to vac suit life support. Any squadron commander in any navy in the galaxy would have ordered them to return to base. But they didn't have a squadron commander, and Jaina and Zek were hanging on the edge of the icefield, directly between the remnant assault fleet and the two Alliance Star Destroyers. When the Hapens sprang their ambush, the Anakin Solo and the Megador would rush to support the assault, and when they did, the Anakin Solo would be turning straight into the two stealth X's. Jaina knew it was crazy, but they both had a full load of shadow bombs, and there was no sense carrying them all the way back to Shedumad. A tiny ball of orange blossomed between Kogo and Uluk as one of the Megador's turbolaser strikes found its target, and a spray of tiny specks began to fly toward both planets. When the flames died away, Jaina could see that the massive station was still spinning, despite the loss of about a sixth of its outer wheel. But now that the gunners had confirmed their range and targeting, it would not be long before the rest of Ororo Station disappeared. She only hoped the evacuation had been completed in time. The Megador continued to spit crimson beams down the throat, striking the target half a dozen times in as many seconds. Ororo Station started to come apart in chunks large enough to identify, and Jaina began to see sections of spokes and wheels tumbling toward the amber-striped faces of the twin gas giants. Then the force shuddered with the surprise of thousands of beings, and the mists began to flash and flicker with a never-ending cascade of turbolaser fire.
"Time to arm the shadow bombs, Sneaky,"
Jaina said to her astromech droid. A tweedle sounded in Jaina's helmet earphone, and the droid scrolled a question across her status display.
"All of them," Jaina replied. "And when I give the launch order, send them—"
Sneaky chirped in indignation, then inquired whether she was under the impression that his logic circuits had been damaged during their recent brush with incineration. If she wanted to arm them all, of course she wanted to launch them all.
"Thanks,"
Jaina said, wondering if his personality module had suffered some heat damage. R9 units were usually a little heavy on self-preservation routines, not self-awareness.
"Didn't mean to doubt you."
Sneaky accepted the apology, then suggested that now might be a good time to dump the shadow bombs and run for the safety of the base. Jaina didn't have the heart to explain they wouldn't be returning to Shedumad. If they were going to land anywhere, it would be aboard the matte black Star Destroyer in front of them. The Anakin Solo fired its ion engines and began to accelerate, starting to bank toward them almost immediately. The Megador lagged behind, its huge mass requiring more energy to move, and its big engines more time to reach peak efficiency. Through the gap between the two, the starfighter battle raging in the throat was just visible, a color-laced mesh of streaking lights and sudden eruptions. Jaina could already make out the sickle-nosed dots of a few Wookiee Owls, and the sleek cylinders of about a half-dozen Skip-Ray blast boats, along with the tiny cruciform shapes of the XJ-7s swarming them. What truly surprised her, however, were the blocky silhouettes of the Stealth X flight already coming up toward the Anakin Solo's belly. They were moving too fast and erratically for her to get an accurate count, even silhouetted against the amber disk of Kogo's striped face. But she guessed there were about three dozen of them, They were rolling and dodging and sliding away from the Solo's defensive fire as though their pilots knew where it would blossom before it arrived. Leading the pack was the charcoal wedge of a Mandalorian Besulik, large and somewhat ungainly, but still fast and powerful. It was taking more fire than the Stealthexes, since it was leaving a long stream of bright blue efflux in its wake, and its sensor negation technologies weren't as efficient. But it hardly mattered, because it was being flown by the best starfighter pilot Jaina had ever seen. Luke Skywalker, of course. And it was weaving through the firestorm coming its way like a holovid stunt pilot running a special effects course. Jaina fired her own ion engines, then looked over to find Zek giving her the thumbs-up signal. She nodded, then they hit their thrusters and shot forward, angling toward the shield generator domes on top of the Anakin Solo's bridge. The first 30 seconds of their approach went as smoothly as could be expected. Jaina lost one of her engines when a faulty feed pump developed a vacuum lock, and the green glow faded from Zek's cockpit when his spliced wire came apart and the instrument panel went dark. But nobody fired at them, or sent a fighter to investigate the pair of dark blurs coming the Anakin Solo's way. And they were well within laser cannon range when a prickle of danger sense raced down Jaina's spine. A blast of alarm flooded the battle meld as Zek felt the same thing. Whether it had been the stains on her neck that finally gave them away or the combat meld, Jaina could not say, and it hardly mattered. The fact was, Kytus had sensed them through the Force. He knew they were coming, and he knew where they were right now. An image of a generator dome, the one on the far end of the Solo's bridge, flashed through Jaina's mind. Zek was letting her know which dome he was targeting. She pointed the nose of her Stealth-X at the other one.
"Launch, Sneaky,"
she ordered into her throat mic.
"Launch, launch, launch!"
A soft clunk reverberated through the cockpit floor as the torpedo tubes opened. At that same moment, space turned white as the Solo opened up with every point defense weapon on Jaina and Zek's side of the hull. The gun crews didn't waste time trying to find their attackers. They just put up a tightly laced cage of cannon fire and hoped the enemy would fly into it. Unable to see through the wall of energy, Jaina turned her hands over to instinct and closed her eyes, picturing the generator dome in her mind and using the Force to hurl the shadow bombs toward it. She felt the cockpit rock as cannon bolts tore through her Stealth-X's unshielded wings. Then Sneaky let out a static-filled overload screech and went silent. Jaina felt herself sinking into her seat as the Stealth-X banked, and she opened her eyes to find the Solo's bridge sliding past her starfighter's belly, with balls of flame erupting at the far end as Zek's shadow bombs blasted their way through the shields to the generator dome. An instant later, Jaina's Stealth-X began to buck hard, and everything below her went orange as her own bombs hit. The orange brightened, and golden forks of dissipation energy began to dance all around the starfighter. And then the color turned so luminous and fiery that even the flash-tinting inner helmet visor could not prevent Jaina's eyes from aching. A shockwave caught her from behind and sent the Stealth-X spinning. The cockpit began to shake and shudder as pieces of starfighter began to fly off the craft, cannons, sensor cones, hull armor. The inertial compensator gave out, and her helmet-heavy head began to whirl around on her shoulders. She pressed back against the neckrest, trying to brace, and fought not to vomit. Everything hurt, her eyes, ears, gut, her joints. She was coming apart just like her starfighter, Jaina knew, and there was nothing she could do about it. But she did something anyway. Jaina felt her feet working the rudders, her hand fighting to bring the stick back, her arms stretching toward the throttles. And slowly, the spinning stopped. The Anakin Solo drifted into view and stayed there, hanging outside her canopy, a little below starboard, and she found herself more or less in one piece. Actually, it was less, because Zek wasn't there anymore. Jaina couldn't feel him in the Force. Couldn't even find the combat meld. She hadn't felt him die, hadn't experienced a sudden shock of fear and pain, could not even remember a wistful pang of regret or farewell. He was just gone. After bringing her Stealth X fully under control and making a quick systems check to see if anything was about to explode, Jaina began to expand her Force awareness, searching for his presence. Instead of Zek, she found the familiar tingle of her danger sense, with the blazing flash of a turbo laser bolt following close behind. The strike blossomed a kilometer short of her Stealth X, but Jaina knew the next one would not miss. There was only one way the gunners could have known where to direct their fire, that there was even something to direct fire at. Kytus. Jaina slammed her throttles forward and was relieved to feel the Stealth X steal forward on two still-functioning engines, deciding she had nothing to lose by making it as difficult for her brother to find her as possible. She began to hide her presence in the Force again. To her relief, the next turbo-laser strike erupted even farther away than had the first, and the next few were little better than stabs in the dark. The gunners knew generally where she was, but not her exact location. Blood trails, it seemed, were not all that precise. At least she hoped that was true. Jaina circled back toward the fight. The Anakin Solo was only about the length of her arm from this distance, but she could see that both ends of the bridge were gone, along with the generator domes that had once been attached to them. Luke and his wing were just beginning their run, popping up over the Anakin Solo's nose while the Megador dropped down behind them, sweeping space with cannon and turbo laser in a desperate attempt to keep the Stealth X's off its companionship. The Anakin Solo itself was pouring turbolaser fire into the ice field, trying just as desperately to drive Tenel Ka's home fleet away from the Remnant's assault fleet. It was a doomed effort. As Jaina accelerated back toward the fight, the Jedi Stealth X's began to loose their shadow bombs. Geysers of flame shot up all along the Anakin Solo's unshielded hull, traveling down its spine in long rows, leaving in their wake jagged, star-shaped breaches ringed by red-hot durasteel. Bodies, equipment, and atmosphere began to rise from the ruptures in long plumes of steam and flotsam. It grew difficult for Jaina to see the sweeping expanse of the ship's dark hull, much less pick her target. The Besulik held its fire, weaving through the stabbing flashes of laser fire toward the bridge. Jaina thought for a moment that Luke meant to crash his fighter into the bridge, but at the last instant he opened up with all systems, pouring cannon bolts and concussion missiles into the thick blast shielding. A circle of durasteel turned white and started to bleed away in glowing bubbles of metal. Then Luke pulled up and vanished over the Anakin Solo's stern with the rest of the Jedi wing. The Megador was right behind him, dropping down over the Anakin Solo like a mother Velcro over her chick. Still, the Stealth X wing tried to come around for another pass, wheeling up behind the Anakin Solo's bridge in a dark, curving swarm that was quickly shredded by the Megador's sweeping turbo lasers. By this time, Jaina was almost on top of the Anakin Solo's vast plane of black durasteel, close enough to see half a dozen Stealth X's explode and several more disintegrate from near-miss shockwaves. And suddenly there were EV beacons and pieces of Stealth X's tumbling everywhere. Luke's Besulik dodged through a flurry of bolts and beams, then came around, starting to lead the survivors back for another run through the teeth of the Megador's batteries. Seeing that they would never make it, and that even if they did, they would never survive, Jaina opened herself to the Force again and reached out to Luke with all the strength she could muster, urging him not to waste himself and his Jedi like that.
"Don't!"
She dropped the nose of her own Stealth X toward the cloaking cone on the Anakin Solo's upper hull.
"Go!"
Luke continued on course for an instant, until a trio of cannon bolts hammered some sense into him by bouncing off the Besulik's Beskar nose. Jaina felt him reach out to her, telling her to trust in the Force. Then he dipped a wing and led the remaining Jedi away from the Anakin Solo. She would have to do it all herself now. Save Isolde and kill her brother. No sooner had Jaina thought this than she felt her brother's attention turning her way again. An instant later, cannon bolts began to stream up from all directions. The stealth X bucked half a dozen times as it took hits. Then something popped, and the cockpit went red with fire warning lights. It didn't matter. Jaina could not have pulled up if she wanted to. And she didn't want to. She blew the canopy and ejected, then watched enthralled as her flaming stealth X crashed through the thin shell of the cloaking cone and exploded through the decks below.
"Get ready, Kytus."
Jaina activated her suit thrusters, then concealed her Force presence again, and started down into the fuming ruins of the cloaking cone.
"Here I come."